Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Leading Ideas Talks is also brought to you by Changes Congregations Face. This adult leadership study curriculum from the Lewis Center is an ideal conversation starter for your small groups, especially for congregations evaluating their own ministries or engaging and planning for the future. Changes Congregations Face is only $3.99 at churchleadership.com/studies. Churches often put a lot of emphasis on nurturing families, children, and those at the start of their faith journey. But what about others? In this episode, we speak with Michelle Van Loon about how churches can better help people in midlife continue to grow in faith as they navigate their unique life challenges.
I'm Ann Michael, Associate Director of the Lewis Center for Church Leadership, and I'm host of this episode of Leading Ideas Talks. I'm visiting today with Michelle Van Loon, who's the author of a new book entitled Becoming Sage, and it addresses spirituality and discipleship in midlife. Michelle is a prolific writer who's authored several other books on subjects related to personal spirituality and spiritual formation. She's a blogger and a women's ministry leader. And Michelle, we're just so excited that you're taking time to talk with us today on this important subject of discipling people in midlife. So welcome, Michelle.
I'm super honored to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so just to start our conversation, and so our readers can understand the parameters of the discussion, I wanted to first ask, how do you define midlife?
Yeah, that's a good one. It depends who's doing the measuring and who's doing the asking in some ways. Statisticians put that the brackets around particular age group, it can be 40 to 65. Sometimes there's a little wiggle room on either side of those margins. But there are people that find themselves kind of pushed into the business of midlife earlier than that, particularly if there's a lot of losses in their lives, loss of, you know, parents that are dying or other big life transitions can kind of hasten people in. And some people, you know, kind of meander into the developmental tasks of midlife when they are older than that. So,
yeah, I appreciate you framing it that way, because I did notice in the book you never talk in terms of numerical ages, that you tend to focus more on the experiences, life transitions that relate to different passages in life, and that midlife is more defined by those maturational markers or developmental milestones than it is by a particular age bracket.
Yep, that's it, in part because if there is something that's super prescriptive, like this will happen to you when you're 40, and if it doesn't, then the conversation gets shut down. It's really more appropriate to kind of notice what's happening in life, what's going on, and that is different for every person.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think there's a need for churches to focus more attention on the spiritual needs of people in midlife?
Well, I believe, and I noticed when I started paying attention to this 10-ish years ago, it was born in part out of my own experience and challenges. As I was hitting midlife and I started looking for information, or somebody at least to be able to tell me this is normal and this maybe is not normal. You know, I had no idea. And I didn't find a ton in popular literature in the church. I was working at a seminary bookstore at the time. So I had access to lots and lots of both scholarly and popular work. And I didn't find much conversation going on in most local churches either, with the church leaders that I was working with or just with the people I knew and fellowshipped with. We are very good, well, or we're better, I should say, at early stage discipleship. We have a lot of focus on discipling children or helping new believers get grounded in the basics of the Christian faith. But then the silence about what comes next in many circles tends to kind of communicate to people that you just keep doing what you learned when you were young. You practice it through the rest of your life, and hopefully you'll get better at it. And discipleship is so much more than that. And the challenges and the tasks that we meet as we age and change require different questions and different kinds of engagement.
Yeah, I really appreciate you framing that, because I think that is so true. And I agree with you that there's very little literature on this subject. I also have not seen anything written on discipleship in midlife, which is one reason I'm so appreciative for the fact that you've written this book. You talk about a quiet exodus in churches. So can you elaborate a bit by what you mean by that?
Absolutely. Most of us, if we're thinking about the changing nature of who's going to church and who's not, there's been a great focus, particularly on the exodus of the millennials, that in previous generations, a lot of times young adults would wander from the church, but they would come back once they married and had families. But those rules aren't applying the same way, those expectations aren't applying the same way in this millennia, in this generation. But what I learned when I started digging into some data as I was researching this book was that the exodus matches, and in some cases, depending on who's doing the measuring, exceeds that of the millennials, of people at midlife and beyond, who are either downshifting their involvement in church or just opting out entirely and just dipping in and out, you know, at big holidays or if there is a felt need.
Yeah, so, I mean, we use the word done, the duns, the people who just think they're kind of done with church, either because their families are grown or maybe they've moved to a new community and they just don't reengage, or people who are fed up. You talk in the book about people who are fed up with church politics and whatever. Yeah, we're not paying attention. I think we think of churches as sort of an enclave of stable older members, and often don't think about the fact that they're probably leaving the church at just the same rate. So it's a frightening thing to think about. So a large portion of your book is devoted to describing some of the transitions and challenges that are typical in midlife. So I wondered if you could name just a few of the needs and issues that people in midlife typically struggle with.
Certainly. And these will be familiar to anybody who is kind of at midlife or beyond. There's issues like changing families and family responsibilities, changing relationships within families, marriages that don't survive the transitions of midlife, aging parents, dying parents, grandchildren that appear on the scene. Some of those changes are happy changes, for sure. A grandchild is a joy and a delight, but it changes the dynamics in a family. Other key points of stress and change can be friendships and relationships beyond the family. We're also dealing with changing church relationships, particularly if we're in a church that's been hyper-focused on kind of family life and building a family culture. Once you kind of age out of that and the nest empties, then it may end up feeling like a very lonely place. So church comes with its challenges and burnout points and, you know, and people change and grow. And sometimes there isn't always language or a hospitable environment to work through some of those challenges. Vocation, finances, all of these things are big things, and they're as big as the questions that hit us when we were young adults about what are we going to do with our life and who are we going to be and who are we going to be with and where are we going to live. All of those big questions and tasks of young adulthood often get reshuffled and changed, and we kind of have to re-engage with some big questions again as we hit this point of our lives.
We'll return to our episode after this brief message from Wesley Theological Seminary.
Online summer courses from Wesley Theological Seminary are available for academic and CEU credit. Courses in July include Church Finances by Lovett H. Weems Jr., Howard Thurman, Mystic Prophetic Theologian by Tony Hunt, Theological Foundations for Youth Ministry, Teaching and Learning in Christian Education, and more. Registration is now open. See the full list of online summer and fall courses and register at wesleyseminary.edu/wesleyonline2020. At Wesley, we pray that you keep safe, keep learning, and keep leading.
Yeah, that's helpful to think about the comparison between young adulthood and older adulthood, because I do think is for people who are on poised on the precipice of retirement, there are so many wide open questions about what life is going to be like and what you're going to do and where you're going to live and how you're going to spend your time and what's going to give your life meaning when you step away from work. I think it is very much like young adulthood in that sense. So one of the things that I found very insightful and helpful about your book was the underlying assumption that the process of growing in faith and maturing as a disciple is a lifelong task. It's not just a box that gets checked off when you're confirmed or when you complete the new members class or, you know, sometime early in your time as a church member. And there's so much conversation in my denomination, United Methodist Church, about, you know, what it means to be a disciple and how we help people grow in discipleship. So I wondered, what do you see as some of the markers and milestones as someone continues to grow in faith, even if they've been in the church all their life, but as if they're going to continue to grow in faith through their mature years, what does that look like?
Well, I can best refer to an academic work that was super important for me as I was starting to research these things for my own life and my own spiritual health. And there's also a popular book. Both of these are about a generation old, but they are key ways of describing kind of spiritual growth through a lifetime in a way that mirrors our physical growth or our emotional growth. Fowler and then the author pair of Hagberg and Gulick were people who applied those kind of developmental stages to faith development. And for me, that was really, really a helpful kind of model to be able to look and understand that at the beginning, we believe in God. And it's simple, whether it's the faith that is in our household or as new faith through conversion. It's just, there you are, God, and I'm here too, and this is amazing. And as people work through that beginning stage, they move into a belonging stage. God, I belong to you. And that includes usually belonging to a group, a church, a Bible study, a youth group, something that kind of helps us see what the Christian life looks like and teaches us both the written rules and then kind of coaches us in some of those unwritten rules and expectations of the group. And if we get good at that stage, then we often may lead or just get stronger. And so we work for God next. And so there's a progression. And it makes sense, particularly as we're looking at first half of life stuff, that it matches sometimes the ambitions that drive us and the goal setting that drives us. And that's wonderful and exciting, but at some point, we end up in the dark. What the dark night of the soul, as St. John of the Cross called it, the desert, this place in our lives, it's not something, there's no prescription to get to it. And there's certainly no, 7-week Bible study program that's going to get us out of it. But being able to understand what it is can be very helpful. And that stage, that God, where are you? I'm alone in the dark kind of stage can come because there's been big losses and changes in our lives. We're also dealing with physiological changes at midlife, menopause for women. Men also experience hormonal and physical changes. So we're dealing with often a lot of stuff that all kind of coalesces around this phase in our lives. And it can feel like the dark. It's also a time of pruning, that sometimes those ambitions that served us well, getting us to belong to God and to work for God and to be, in our churches connected and leading and involved, needs some dismantling so that what can grow there can be a fruitful second half of life. And so as that happens, not everybody makes it through to the other side. It's scary being in the dark, and some people just kind of double down and try to go back to Egypt, to use a phrase. So after that comes legacy.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
I was just going to say, from what you've been describing, that a mature faith is one that weathers the storm.
The storm and creates legacy and meaning. Not necessarily accomplishment. As a matter of fact, accomplishment becomes less of a question, but creates meaning and legacy for the people around you, the people that you want to pass it on to.
You use the language of becoming sage, which is the title of the book, but I think that phrase becoming sage is also a way that you're describing what spiritual maturity is, what it looks like. So how did you settle on that term and that metaphor?
Well, I think as I looked in scripture, the goal when it comes to trials, when it comes to maturity, wisdom is often linked with that. And so being able to find a word that kind of captured that, the notion of sage is somebody that is older, that is, it's also a delicious cooking herb, but that is older and has wisdom and value and gravitas to pass on to a community.
Yeah, thank you for that. The question that I most wanted to put to you is, what's a church to do? You make the case so effectively that there's a need to better meet the spiritual needs and to better minister to people in midlife. So I wanted to ask you, what are some of the ways that congregations can more effectively engage people in midlife?
Well, I created in this book, at the end of every chapter, there's individual reflection questions that can be helpful for self-examine, for journaling, but there's also group discussion questions that I hope will prompt some good conversation among church leaders and groups that might want to study the book, because it's definitely written for a popular audience. It's meant to be super user friendly. But for church leaders to recognize a program isn't going to fix this. It's going to require just kind of a change of orientation that includes praying for the older people who are committed to the congregation. I've never heard a church leader pray for people that are involved in caregiving, for example. Not that it's not happening, but there's a lot of people that are caring for aging parents or spouses or grandchildren, and being able to to find ways to support and put them back in the center of the church community, and to recognize that what they're doing is an extension of the church's ministry, for example, is one thing. But also to be able to talk and think beyond just how do we get young people into the church. Absolutely, those are really, really important questions. And you want to be able to capture a family and give them a good foundation and help them to grow. But family includes all of us from first breath to last and beyond. And so being able to think about how we're doing intergenerational ministry is another consideration. And to consider also how the culture of the church might be burning out some of those long-term members. That requires some self-reflection and being willing to listen to some of the people who once were involved, who may not be involved, or who even have left.
Yeah, so I'm hearing you say there's not necessarily a programmatic response, which I think would be people's first instinct. I mean, we need to start a new ministry team or a new group or something like that. So knowing that it's not that, setting that aside, are there other resources or examples of congregations that are doing a good job with this?
I have found some. Now, it's interesting that we're speaking as we're in the coronavirus era, and almost everything is being pushed and challenged when it comes to church life right now. And this is actually a really interesting opportunity for church leaders to begin to think, what is our congregation going to look like on the far side of this? Some people, I have a friend who's a pastor in rural Indiana, and he said, we usually get 200 people on a Sunday morning, but we're having 1,200 tune in for our live stream, our broadcast that we're doing. So he said, there's a big disconnect for me in, like, I don't know who these people are. Maybe some of them are people that have moved away or whatever, but he said, it tells me that there's a hunger and that I'm going to have to think more creatively about how to engage these people as we're going forward. Even as we begin gathering, does that mean maybe that we continue to find some ways to connect with some of these people? You know, it's those kinds of questions that our current environment may be cultivating that will lead to some lasting change that looks different than what we were doing before.
Yeah, I am hearing that everywhere. It's certainly been the experience in my own church as well, that the changes that have been made out of necessity as a result of this crisis are opening our eyes to the fact that there are people that are hungry to connect with us who will probably never come in the doors of our church, and how we're going to continue to be in ministry with those people as hopefully we get to a different phase. I think it's one of the most important questions. And some of those are probably these burned out, you know, maybe midlife people who no longer feel that coming to church meets their needs, but still have a spiritual hunger. So if a church or if an individual wanted to start giving more attention to midlife discipleship, is there a simple first step that you would recommend?
Well, I would say that probably the logical first step is that once you're aware of something, you can't become unaware of it. So if someone is listening right now, then and they're thinking, oh, yeah, we're probably not doing this very well, don't just put that question away. Let it begin to spark conversation and prayer with the people around you, you know, your leadership team, ministry leaders, people in a small group or a Bible study. Just beginning to have some conversations coupled with prayer, recognizing that Scripture puts great emphasis on aging and maturity as something of value is a good starting place.
Yeah, I think maybe just even in hearing this or reading your book, sort of knowing that if someone in midlife is feeling this sense of spiritual disconnect or spiritual dissatisfaction, that they're not alone. And maybe being able to put a name to the fact that this is a normal experience, but there still is the opportunity to continue and the need to continue to find ways to mature and grow in faith. And that sort of opens their eyes to that need and that response, which I think in and of itself is really helpful. It helped me in reading the book to name the problem, really. Mm-hmm. Well, Michelle, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with me and our listeners today. And again, to applaud you on this book, because I think it is really a helpful perspective and a novel one, because as we've already said, I haven't seen a lot else written on this subject. So I want to thank you for talking with us today, and thank you for your work in drawing our attention to this really important issue.
Thank you. It's been an honor to hang out with you.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.